Let's put a song so you can sing along with a special guest or two.
Or two.
You like to sing and dance, and this podcast, by chance, explores musicals for you. Theme Song, yeah!
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Life's But a Song, a podcast that likes to live in the land of musicals. I'm your host, John, and with me today is a pairing that I enjoy our conversation the last time that I made us pair together. It's Lauren Gismondi and Sierra Ryan, everyone. Woo!
Woo! Hooray! We're here!
How are both of you?
Fine.
I'm a little loopy, so this is going to be fun.
Oh, this is going to be fun.
What are you, not loopy, Lauren, though? Come on.
Well, no, I have a nasty head cold, and the medication is making me loopy. So that's why I was like, I do need my notes for this, because the sentences may not be complete.
And that's okay. Well, we're here today on Easter Sunday, and, I say that, and nobody will really believe me. But I now have two voices that can help me be like, no, we actually did record this on Easter.
We did. Yes,
March 31st. It's 2024. It's Easter Sunday.
Yes. I will take a picture later or something. I don't know. And we're here today to talk about the 1948 classic film, Easter Parade on Easter. Ha-ha!
What are the odds?
The screenplay is by Sidney Sheldon, Francis Goodrich, and Albert Hackett. Music and lyrics by the one and only Irving Berlin. Directed by Charles Walters. I don't know why I wrote it twice on the outline. And according to IMDb, a nightclub performer hires a naive chorus girl to become his new dance partner, to make his former partner jealous, and to prove he can make any partner a star. So basically, it's Pygmalion, but with dance.
With dancing.
Yep.
I don't think I've ever seen this movie before.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
Wow. And it held my attention throughout. I was never on my phone, really. I was only on my phone at one point when it was, what's that song? The rain one.
Oh, the fellow with the umbrella.
Yes.
Sweet Peter Lawford.
A fellow with an umbrella, because I was just like, why does nobody have an umbrella in this scene? When were umbrellas invented? And so I went on a little mission to figure that out. And then all of a sudden I looked up and I see extras with umbrellas, and I went, okay, so they just don't have it. They're bad New Yorkers not planning with their umbrellas.
It happens in 2024.
Yeah, like they're real New Yorkers. Yeah. Goodness.
And she only had two blocks to go, so it's not like she was like, I'll survive.
It is New York they're in, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They walk up and down Fifth Avenue in the first
scene
and then the last scene.
And they're in there's the new Amsterdam Theater, and aren't they at the Follies are in New York City too?
The Follies, yep. Yeah.
Yep.
So, who? I'm assuming both of you have seen this movie before.
Yes. Mm-hmm. This is one of those that I put my boombox close to the television screen as a teenager and made my own cassette, soundtracks out of this. So this is deep ingrained in my head, my memory.
So I was reading up on the IMDb trivia on this as well, and it said that Gene Kelly and Sid Charisse were supposed to be the Fred Astaire and Ann Miller characters respectively, but both of them were injured at the time.
Yeah. Oh. I know Gene Kelly was playing touch football, I think, in his front yard or something like that.
Some sports thing. And you're like, Gene Kelly, what are you doing?
Yeah. I mean, he's decent. He's an athletic guy who wants to play and stuff, I do think that it was like Gene had recommended him to the producers, like, hey, if you want to get someone to replace me, might as well do Fred Astaire. And then Fred called him and said, hey, is it okay if I do this movie? They asked me to replace you. And he's like, yeah, I yeah, I'm the one who said, replace me with pick Fred. And and you know, the idea is that Fred was kind of he was retired a little bit from movie making for a while, and this kind of revitalized his career, and he made a lot of movies after the fact, you know, Finian's Rainbow, and this is the next generation of Fred Astaire movie musicals in his career. So we thank A Broken Ankle for that.
And this was, he was in his 50, he was 49 when the film was released. So it also should, I also read that Vincente Minnelli was originally supposed to direct, but his their psychiatrist advised them not to work together.
Ooh, he and Judy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they did work together before, but now in their sordid history.
And Mimi and St. Louis, right?
Yes.
That's when they met, right? That's when they
Yes. And then I feel like they did another movie together.
Wasn't The Pirate also directed by Minnelli?
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. Which came out the same year.
Yeah, so maybe that was their like, maybe let's not do that again. Get another director for Easter Parade. I don't know off the top of my head who Charles Walters is, and I didn't look him up, so I'm bad at that. So what did Charles Walters do?
Well, let's find out.
Yeah, this is one of those, like, I didn't even think, as much as I love this movie, I've never thought to look up the director of this.
So actually, Charles Walters is the one who directed Meet Me in St. Louis.
Oh,
Vincente
sorry.
Minnelli did The Pirate. Yes. He also directed The Unsinkable Molly Brown, Charles Walters. And let's see what else is there. Gigi.
Oh, Gigi. Yeah.
Goodness, he has affinity for period pieces.
Yeah.
High Society.
Yeah,
that's a period. No, High Society is of the time, I think.
He was also the director of the 1945 Ziegfeld Follies movie.
Oh, yay.
For a segment called A Great Lady Has an Interview. But this is his... But Easter Parade is his third movie, second feature film.
Oh,
gotcha.
Because his first one was called Good News. That starred Peter Lawford.
There we go. Yep. He brought back some of his favorites, I guess.
And what's interesting for me watching Easter Parade, I was like, oh, look, Ann Miller and crap, I forget his name right now. The guy that was the Jules Munchen.
Oh, yes.
Like they
It's the On the Town group.
They were On the Town, and I forgot that On the Town is after this. This is Jules Munchen's, like, first film. And audition as well?
Maybe. I don't know how they got him in. But he also did Take Me Out to the Ball Game after this with Frank Sinatra and Gene Kelly. So that's the same On the Town buddy group that did that. And I love him in this. He's got that, you know, that princess track where he just comes in and does some goofy stuff and then kind of steals the scene and then leaves.
That monologue of making a salad was his like last round of auditions, apparently, like a weird screen test. I was reading about this on the IMDb trivia, so grain of salt, everyone, but films would do this as sort of like a test screening to see how audiences would react. And he and somebody else who I can't remember are the only two that really, like, got a contract out of it.
Huh. Is it one of those, like, SNL auditions where they have to come in with, like, what their shtick is?
Was it
scripted for him?
I think it was just a scripted thing, and they're like, go.
There. Enjoy.
We'll figure it out.
Yep.
But this movie also, like, the musical numbers made me think of other movies, or like there was one that Steppin' Out with My Baby. I swear there's a moment in there that sounded like the Mambo from West Side Story. Something like some
well,
part
yeah.
of it.
The slow-mo section, probably.
I can't remember.
Yeah, there's a famous slow-mo section.
That slow-mo section was wild.
Yep.
So this movie, is this like one of your Easter tradition movies, or do you watch it just any time of the year? Because Easter isn't really that big of a deal in this movie, I feel like.
What do you think, Lauren? Like, I feel like this could have been Flag Day, the musical. It just depends on, you know, a date that everyone knows. I think also, well, we had an Irving Berlin song called Easter Parade to focus around. And from what I don't remember how the whole gift giving on Easter, I don't remember how much of a issue that is in real life for someone to show up with, you know, flowers and bunnies and chocolate and things like that, and a hat, you know, for your loved one. But I sort of realized, oh, maybe it for the time, like this is set in 1912. So it's the Ziegfeld Follies. It's the long pencil skirts. It's, you know, there's gender norms, that kind of thing. And maybe the idea is that Easter is the only time that a woman can buy a man stuff. Or it's funny that she buys the man stuff at the end, because that's the only kind of gender reversal from the beginning of the movie that he's now experiencing, her throwing all these gifts at him on the anniversary of them, you know,
meeting yeah.
and starting this business and eventually romantic relationship. That's the only. I mean, but also it's like, okay, we have a lot of Christmas movies. We have a lot of, you know, other holiday movies. Oh, do we have an Easter movie? No, let's capitalize on that.
So I initially learned about this movie actually through a very, very old SNL sketch where Chevy Chase is playing. He was always Jimmy Carter, right? He was the president.
Yes.
So it's him doing Christmas, like the Christmas fireside chat with the nation. But instead of singing "Wear Your Easter Bonnet," he sings "Wear Your Christmas Bonnet."
So he was doing a parody.
Christmas Bonnet, like, you know, drunk and like making fun of the whole thing. And so that's kind of this. That was during my undergrad. It sort of led me to Easter Parade, because I was like, "What is happening in this SNL sketch from like season one of the program?" And that's how I ended up watching this movie for the first time. And I can't say I watch it with any regularity at Easter, truthfully. Can't. There's a few other hits at the Gismondi household, one of which I know my sister is tormenting my parents with, which is the claymation version of the Easter Bunny is coming to town, and ooh. Peter Cottontail. like, so that's, I got the, they were with me all day today, and then they got home, and my sister, as both my parents were closing, were, you know, my sister is 30, or 31. So you can give me an idea how old my parents are. And she's like forcing them to watch that. So Easter Parade, I think, would be a welcome break to the Easter Bunny is coming to town and Peter Cottontail, truly.
I will
In
say
case
this
anybody
time-
else is like looking for Easter movies to watch other than the Easter Beagle, it's the Easter Beagle, Charlie Brown.
Aww.
You got some choices.
My
I will
favorite.
Say this time around, I did purchase it. I think the last time I watched it, I rented it for like $3.99. This time, yeah. I just purchased it for $4.99.
Exactly, like, it was a difference of a dollar.
Might as well. I'm probably going to watch it again on an Easter, you know, maybe in 20 years, but at least I already own it.
Yeah, unquote. This movie was just great. I have to say, it's pretty
up there
to look at. They've got a lot of dancing, a lot of singing. There's, yep. there is, well, on my list, I have 16 songs, but like three of them are just instrumental songs. So really like 13 songs in this movie, which is not bad. It's a lot for this time as well. And like, you start off with Fred Astaire in a showroom of sorts, seeing models walk out with different hats and accessories that match the color of the hat.
He's
And
going
then he goes,
shopping. That's how you went shopping back then.
I was like, this is weird. And then later, but like later when he and Judy go shopping, he's like, we'll take that dress. And she never tried it on. And you're like, oh, I guess it fits. I mean, she's also tiny, so.
Yeah, and they would have it, they would usually have it tailored, or they would tailor itself because everyone knew how to sew.
True.
By hand.
By hand.
Well,
yeah.
They probably had
some machine.
No, it's 1912. They would have had machines. No.
There's the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory was about to burst into flames. So.
Right.
Yeah, so they had machines.
History. What
history.
Fun.
But where do we want to start? I have no plans for this one. I was just like, we're doing it on Easter. There's a lot to talk about, and I don't think we're going to cover everything in this one episode. Because
no, I will say out the gate, Irving Berlin has some of the best music ever written for the American Songbook, and there are some goofy, boring ones as well in this. But some of them are so quick, it's just kind of like, okay. Or they're sung by Judy Garland, and you don't really care what she's singing, and it's amazing. But this is an interesting combination of like songs that Irving Berlin had in his trunk since probably 1905.
He wrote this since
1912.
Yeah.
Some of the songs are from the period. Yeah. So they're not like historical things. They are actually.
Yeah. And but then there's, I think not Easter Parade, Steppin' Out With My Baby was written for the movie. So there was some mixture of new songs that were introduced to the public. So if you imagine, this came out in 1948. So this is a nice nostalgia, you know, 30-year period of that the audience would go to see songs that they already knew from Irving Berlin, and to be like, oh, this is a new song, ooh, you know, and this is their youth. They're looking back on it's kind of like us seeing movies set in the 90s, you know, or 80s and 90s. So it's kind of fun to hear, to think about that. There's a lot of movies in the 40s about the teens.
Yeah, the ones that I'm seeing, A Fellow with an Umbrella, It Only Happens When I Dance with You, and A Couple of Swells were written specifically for the film.
Gotcha. Not Steppin' Out? I thought Steppin' Out was also...
I'm not seeing anything, but I can't... That's not to say that it's...
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know it might be easier to find it when Steppin' Out.
Correct.
Was
it was. You are correct. It was written for the movie. Yes.
I liked it. There's that shot of the sheet music of It Only Happens When I Dance with You with Ann Miller and Fred Astaire's picture, and then it says
yes.
Words and music by Irving Berlin. I'm like, hey, he's in this.
He made it.
He made it.
one of the weird ones reminded me of Cover Girl, the girl on the magazine cover, where I was like, this is basically, but it felt also very Follies-esque.
Oh yeah, that's it's from that. It, like Du Barry Was a Lady, I think, has a sequence, and of course it was parodied in Singing in the Rain.
Yes,
and the girl on the magazine cover is a song from 1915, I think it said, or the teens. Cool.
Yeah.
So it's from this time period that Cover Girl then did a like homage to it by making it a parody.
Right.
So it's very, very, this movie is very fascinating, I have to say, and all the history behind it. But it's Judy, and it's Ann Miller, and it's Fred Astaire. So you know some gays are at this time period. We're like, yes, queens, yes, obviously does.
Well, that's an interesting question. I was curious about is whether or not the three of them had ever been in a movie before or since then together.
All together,
because I think the answer is no.
I don't think so. Because, well, did I? Sierra and I definitely went through the Judy Jean movies.
Sure, sure.
Honestly, I can't think of another Judy and Fred.
That's just it.
Movie, unless they were like listed in like Words and Music, where they were in different pieces throughout the entire thing, or Zippo Follies, where they're in different things. And Ann Miller, yeah, I think this is just kind of, and Peter Lawford, obviously. I don't think the Venn diagram ever reappeared. I'd have to think about that if there's any.
No, I don't think so. Like, did Judy and Fred?
I picked my brain. I was like, I don't think there is anything.
I don't know. And
because he was aging into other work, and she was still pretty young at that point in 1948. So they probably wouldn't have crossed paths like that. The fact that this is like basically not what I'm saying. This is the only time where maybe we could believe that they would work out romantically.
Right.
Without the age gap being super apparent, I think is what I'm getting at.
Great. We're here. Let's talk about the romance in this movie. Because I am.
Which one, John? You gotta
very
be specific.
There's so many. About everything.
This is not a love triangle. It's a love, like, rectangle. It's so.
It's a blob. There are no points. Love blob. Love blob. Everybody loves everybody, and it's uncomfortable.
So a fella with an umbrella happens. Right. And I Quite was randomly. Like, sweet. It's interesting that it's Judy and Peter Lawford. Peter Lawford is not the lead of this movie. He is a supporting character, but like ish, you know, it's that weird like gray area of you're always there, but you are not the named person. You are not Fred Astaire.
You are not Don Hughes, goddammit.
Yes, you are not Don Hughes. So but there was something I was like, oh, that's so cool that they're smitten and they're going to fall in love. And there's this that weird sexual tension between the two of them. But I wasn't sure, like, who Nadine was dating. Did she date any of the, like, either Don or Johnny? Like,
Nadine wanted Johnny.
Yes. Yes.
There was that scene, the very first scene, she does come on to him as only a 1912 lady can. But yeah, there was this whole thing where Don loves Nadine. Nadine loves Johnny. Johnny suddenly gets the hots for Hannah. And Hannah kind of eventually falls in love with Don.
I don't know when that happened.
I think she realizes why she was pushing away Johnny or the professor as much, and she's like, okay, it's not just professional, it's I kind of like the, you know, the
she
guy
gives
who
that monologue
me yeah the guy who yeah. sweeps me and up and dances with me, but he doesn't notice me. Oh,
and I was just like, no. I turned into Darth Vader for a moment. No! Oh, just because, like, oh god. And then when they fight and she doesn't answer she doesn't open the door in her hotel room and he gets escorted out, I was like, yes, she's gonna fall in love with Johnny. Again, first time watching, so I didn't know what was going to happen. And
they were cute. He was very sweet. And, you know, I think a lot of these musical movies don't do very much very hard depth, real analysis about why people love each other or why they don't and why they fall in love. And I don't know. I love the fact that when finally Don like admits that he's in love with her, he says, was it
why didn't you tell me
why didn't you tell me I was in love with you?
Moronic. I'm like, this is some patriarchal alpha male crap.
Tell me I was in love with you
because you're an idiot. It's not like he would have listened. I don't think he would have listened if she had said that to him,
which that was in another movie with Judy Garland.
Was that also in Me and My Girl?
Hold on, let me I know Gene Kelly said it at some point to her in a movie. I just
I
don't
think
remember
it's for
which
me and
one.
My gal. You just remember.
Well, it happens in the Harvey Girls too, to a certain extent as well.
For Me and My Gal, yes, but it's Gene Kelly. But like the fact that
would have been a callback to their first movie together. Oh, that's cute. Yeah, that's true.
But there's also, so there was also a cut number from this called Mr. Monotony that thought this was Get Happy.
Well, the outfit is. Yeah,
but because the song was deleted from this and then inserted, like, then they, when they went back and reshot Get Happy with Judy Garland, they thought that they just moved the song over, not realizing that it's two different songs.
Two different songs, yeah. Which is a great song, but it's not really the same style. I mean, there's a lot of things in this, including Stepping Out With My Baby and Shaking the Blues Away, that are very 40s. I don't, like, the tap dancing would not be to that extent in the 1912s.
No.
She's showing her legs.
I know. Like, I was like, oh, hello.
No.
Like, so much of her legs, which was for probably the modern audience rather than the historical.
It's also like she, for the longest time, held the Guinness Book of World Records for the most amount of taps in a minute.
Yeah.
Like,
really?
That's
like a machine gun.
Yeah, yeah. It's literally, when I was actively studying tap, was like somebody we would watch.
Yeah.
Because it was like you couldn't see. But she's making noises, but her feet are like not even really moving. So like, how is this possible?
Superhero ankles.
Yeah, insane, insane. Like, I mean, she is precise, and that precision in that scene. So yes, of course, it's not period appropriate. I concur. But I'm sitting there, I'm like, it's her spotlight moment. I think that that whole thing got her into On the Town later. Mm-hmm. For the whole Prehistoric Man bit. It's stylistically, it's super similar to Prehistoric Man, minus the, you know, the arm swinging on the Town in that number.
Okay, because that was another one that I was like, I'm getting similar vibes, but because
or too darn hot, yeah.
I think Prehistoric Man is like, if I remember correctly, I don't like that song just because of the lyrics.
And I was like, racism. Yeah, some people probably find it insulting. Yes. Yeah.
But like that, this one, it would, like, I was just like, I'm getting a similar vibe. And is it like the same choreography or similar moments in the choreography that she does?
It's probably her style. It's probably her style of dance that she excels at, and they take advantage of that. The fact that she can do those turn whips and tapping at the same time, and you could see the hair just kind of fling out from her. I love Ann Miller so much from this.
For this song,
all the blush that she ever wears.
Oh my gosh.
So much blush.
Like,
so much extra makeup.
Her hair too.
Stamped.
Yeah. I was obsessed with her hair because the portion that's closest to her face is lighter than the rest of it.
Darker piece in the back. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was like, that's probably some sort of filmmaking thing. That's not a historical thing, but also it worked oddly.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Like, I think I forgave this movie for a lot of the historical inaccuracies, just because it's just a fun time.
It's like a movie that came out in the 70s about like certain ages, and everyone has like bad bowler haircuts and longer hair than they should. You know, it's like, okay. This is the 1940s looking back on, you know,
on
the
teens,
but not quite.
Yeah, because like there's that moment before, I think it's before Shaking the Blues Away, where we're in the vestibule of whatever the theater is, I can't remember, and you see a picture of her, and I was like, I don't think this is accurate, but I don't really care that much. Like,
that it would be a picture as opposed to a drawing.
A drawing, yeah. Because it was rendering. A picture with some color in it. And I was like, that doesn't seem right. Maybe the photograph would be, but like, everything looks wrong here. And I'm okay. I don't care. Tap away. You tap.
Yep.
I also lost my mind during the drum crazy tap dance / drum break.
Oh, it was interesting because someone posted on Facebook in my feed, like, hey, little known that Fred Astaire was actually a very well experienced drummer I'm like, if you've seen Easter Parade, you already know that. That's his drumming skills. Like, and that's not a secret. He was the king of rhythm and coordination. Of course he was a good drummer at the time. Yeah.
I just liked how Happy Easter led into Drum Crazy. It felt like what would later be the what's called the vaudeville montage, where you're just like, oh, there is no like stop and next. It's like it's
a good
very
story.
Fluid.
It's good storytelling from one thing to the next, and good setups of songs, whether it's they're performing or they're rehearsing or they're distracting a kid from a bunny rabbit toy. yeah.
So the whole idea, the IMDb summary, I think is correct, where Don and Nadine, Fred Astaire and Miller respectively, were a dance couple or they had a professional relationship. And she's like, hey, I got an offer. I'm going to headline. Goodbye. And I was just like, well, I don't think she's wrong doing anything she's saying, where she's like, no, you signed the contracts for everything that's coming up. I have no skin in this game. And so now I got an offer and I want to move on with my life. And I was just like, yes, little 1912 by way of 1940s feminism. Woo!
Woo! Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
but like, was she wrong? I mean, both of you are performers.
I think she should have told him a little earlier, but maybe she didn't have a chance to before he barged in and said, "Time to pack your trunks. Let's go."
And at this point in time, women were still considered property. Like, we still hadn't secured the right to vote. So this is something to think about. Like, there's a real possibility. Part of the reason that she didn't sign the contract, the ones that were already in place, mm-hmm. for the Hughes and Nadine and Hughes hoop-de-doo lolly party. I'm calling it that now. It could honestly be it's because, well, there's a man in the performing duo and he's the one who's takes care of all that stuff. So she just has to show, she just needs to show up. You know, he bears the responsibility of everything, which then means that, yes, then he can, if she chooses to leave, take anybody else with him. True. You know, she's not liable, you know, but especially, you know, and it's apparent really early on that only the personal feelings of love and beyond that are one-sided. So I think that's also probably why she felt it was kind of easy to walk away. Yeah. She's like, you know, she even says it. She's like, I don't want to be a hoofer forever. I want to progress in my career. And this is not progress.
Well, the other thing I wasn't sure about is that, like, it seems like Don, when he was partnered with Hannah, so now Judy, like, they introduced singing into the act. And I don't think they ever said that Don and Nadine sang. It just seemed like they were just strictly dancers.
Well, if you remember, like, the very first time they perform on stage as
the feather,
as Juanita and Hughes.
Yes, Juanita.
It was the just dance, feathers. Right? It was just the...
It was just dancing, yes.
Yeah. I think the song was called Beautiful Faces Need Beautiful Clothes. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Which I never knew what the hell that song was. Obviously instrumental. But yeah. I read that they added all those feathers because it harkened back to the infamous Ginger Rogers dress that had feathers flying everywhere in the first...
Well,
the first take.
Yeah. It wasn't just that one. It was also in the first time it was It Only Happens When I Dance With You. She has feathers too on her costume,
yes,
that were flying everywhere.
Yeah.
I was like, but, no one learned? No one learned.
I mean, more on Judy's outfit, I think.
They left way more of that falling off of Judy's, okay? Because Ann Miller, that orange dress was stunning. And I do not do orange really almost anything.
The one with
I
the
was
fan,
like, that looks
that
beautiful.
Feathered fan. Oh my God, it's gorgeous.
What is this?
That's so gorgeous.
A lot of Judy's costumes I was in love with. Like, there was that one that I thought it was an actual performance costume, but it seems like it was just a rehearsal piece. That like weird that sweater that had the square the checks on it and the little rhinestones, or it was something shiny, and she had like a tie on as well.
Oh yeah.
It was
Yeah,
their audition
her
for the
audition, her
song.
brown one. Oh no, oh yes, the one
It's like
the,
a blue, it's like a
blue and
two-tone
green.
blue,
Blue
I
and green,
think.
I think. Yeah, or pale green or something.
Something
Yeah.
like that. And
Yeah.
I was like, that's gorgeous. And it's just an everyday thing. What?
Yeah.
I
Well,
mean, now she's
well,
making
he's
150 a week, so she can afford it.
Woo. And they're auditioning for Ziegfeld, so that's important.
Well, did she buy it or did he buy it for her? Because he it's because there
I'm sure he bought it.
he gave that
He okayed
whole
everything.
transformation. It's so interesting to see that this came before the My Fair Lady movie, but I mean after the book.
A little bit
So
like that. And
this is a
I will
weird thing in
point
history, in
out
film history.
the costumes were Irene did the women's costume and Vals, Valles did the men's costumes.
Valle?
Both Valle, Val, But they had
Of course,
two.
Irene did it.
Yeah.
It's always Irene. She's
Yeah.
very busy.
Yes, very, very busy.
At the MGM lot.
Yep.
Which, even like at the very beginning, when you got the MGM logo, it felt like they messed with those colors too. And like, it's nothing that I'm, like mad about. I was just like, oh, we're doing Eastery colors. Cool. That's,
Maybe that's just the print. I don't know.
or it
Maybe.
could just be the print, but I thought they messed with it just because it was a little more pastel-y looking.
I didn't notice,
I will
frankly.
have to look back.
Sorry, I pay attention just things sometimes.
Okay. Because
I
okay.
pay attention to unimportant things sometimes. So, okay, let's see. What else do we have on here? Oh yeah, Juanita. Like, what is with
Oh my God.
that
Oh my God. Has
name?
to be.
The woman dancer must be exotic. That was it. I was
Although
like, oh, brother, here we go.
is that also poking fun at the pirate? Even though the pirate came out the same year.
Did they know about that? Did they already were they already gonna make it? I think it's just a I think it probably in the script it was a we're stealing your identity, which has already been established as this, nice girl singer from the saloon who knows how to dance, but she has to put a garter on her left leg because she has
Okay,
she has a
considering
little
that she
difference between
did
her
this
left
to
and her
me,
right feet. Yep. That's
could
just
somebody
comedy.
explain this, how she doesn't know by now the garters on, like, I don't know, I didn't understand how that the I wrote with my left hand, but then I was told to write with my right hand, and now I don't know my left from my right, and I was just like, what?
It's comedy.
It is comedy, but there is truth to that, especially if you came from a Christian household. If you were left-handed, they did really push
They
to
beat it out
train
of
you to
you.
be right-handed.
Yeah. So
Yeah,
maybe it's
because like
like
even
anxiety, like, oh my God,
yeah,
it's PTSD
it is. It's
from being
that. It's
forced.
that because literally in Italian, the word for like left is sinistra, which is real close to sinister. So.
Well, I love how she has this issue and she wears the rubber band on her leg
Until she can't feel her
until she
leg
can't feel her
anymore.
leg. And
Yeah.
then she eventually they do a lot of dancing together, so it seems like, and then they're on Broadway finally, so everything's, and then she has a slight panic attack where she's like, oh my God, where's my garter? I have to put my garter on. It's my
Yeah, opening
last
night. Yeah, yeah,
opening
yeah.
night. She's got opening night jitters, so she's like, I gotta at least put the garter on so I feel like I know where my left from my right. So it comes full circle.
Yeah, semblance of control.
Yeah, a semblance of control.
And on their opening night, they perform Steppin' Out with My Baby and Wear a Couple of Swells, where I didn't really like Wear a Couple of Swells. It felt a little disjointed. Well,
Well, it's
first of
no
all,
be a clown,
it's
but
no
that's
Be a
okay.
Clown. But also, this is they're not doing a show. They're just doing like a review of
Yeah,
sorts,
it's the
or
Follies, it's the version of the Follies. Yeah.
okay, because they Because there was that moment where he's like, I'm meeting with the writers to write it, to talk about the show and everything. And I was like, but
what
musicals weren't
writers?
really a thing at this time period. They were, but they weren't big. And it was more mostly like vaudeville with the different acts, which they show you in this.
Right.
I really did like that, where you see like the sign with their names and everything. And you're like, oh, cool. That history, theater history, everyone.
Yeah. Well, The Couple of Swells is a parody on, or is a satire of rich people, basically. So it's coming from that vaudeville era. And the idea, I guess, was that, oh, there's Hannah in, with dressed as a man and dressed down and scrubby, and she's got 5 o'clock shadow and a missing tooth, and she's kind of being a goofball. And Essie, who is Nadine's maid, basically spies and watches from the back of the house. And then, even though she's totally seeing how much of a hit the show is, she reports back to Nadine that, oh my God, it's I feel so sorry for them. She was all gross, and she was all dirty, and she's trying to make her boss feel better about
what's
how,
about to happen.
About,
he just
yeah.
gave her opinion, not the consensus of the room, it feels
No, of
like.
course not. Of course not. People are loving it. And but it's kind of a little bit of a
So
way of telling a lie to make her feel bad,
were A Couple of Swells supposed to be like in the world of the movie, or in the world of the story that's happening, them making fun of Nadine because she is the high society lady, or are they making fun of society, high society in general?
General,
yeah,
I wasn't
for
sure if
sure.
this was him
General.
like poking fun at her, because now at the point of
No.
their relationship, Don and Hannah's at this point is when they're in love, question mark.
No,
We're
I think it's just general making sad fun of rich people, because it's like, oh, we could do all these things, but ooh, we can't do that because we're poor, so we're gonna walk.
That's the whole joke, isn't it? The whole time
Yeah.
is like, yeah, we're just gonna walk.
We could sail up the avenue, but we haven't got a yacht, so we'll walk up the avenue. I loved the fact when the traveling background
Background. Oh.
as they just kick, and then at one point it's going the opposite way, and they have to wave it to go the right way. Yeah, it's cute. And then I think Judy is hilarious in this. She's having so much goofy fun in that. And, yeah, and
Yeah.
it's and if you think about this and Be a Clown, and then in Summer Stock, the hopeful wake up in the beautiful music with all the dogs, that was meant to be sort of the same kind of vaudeville-esque
What's the one in
goofballs.
Summerstock that was supposed to be a trio but then turned into a
Yeah,
duet?
that's Heavenly Music to
That's
me. It's
okay.
a Heavenly Music. It was supposed
Okay.
to be that kind of we're dressing down, we're being completely goofy, we're not elegant, we're just kind of having fun.
I also didn't understand the point of all the dogs for Nadine. I mean, I get it, it's another joke, but I wasn't sure if she loved the dogs. Did I miss, I don't know if I missed something about her love of dogs or her being the first, puppy kennel or
They're
something.
another accessory to her. She literally nicknames one of the dogs Short Hemline.
Yes, the first
Essie says,
puppy.
yeah, the first puppy is like, come here, Short Hemline. And then when they get a new dog, he's like, oh, it'll be perfect with my beige outfit or something.
When they get the pug, and then the maid, I forget her name, says, what happened
Essie.
to your face?
Yeah, someone pushed your face in.
Was like, that's comedy gold right
You know
there.
what it is? It makes sense to me because as she gains her independence as a performer and as a person, she gets more dogs.
I love the little one
I
when after the Ziegfeld audition, when they realize that they're going to audition for her
yes, for
show,
her
she
show.
comes in that amazing like green velvet,
Yes.
and she's got this
Yes.
teeny weeny, teeny weeny
Yep.
dog.
Just there.
She
Yes.
has
Yes.
every
Oh.
scene there's a different dog, and I'm like, I have to commend you for that, Because yeah. like when, because there's the two in her first scene that we just talked about. There's that one. There's the one when she's strolling down Fifth Avenue. It's a yes. dog entirely.
Yep. Yeah. And that becomes a joke even with Johnny. At the very end.
He's
on the phone with her. He is on the phone with her. He's like, get all your hounds out. We're going for a walk.
Get out all the hounds.
I also didn't notice, this was on the IMDb trivia, when he calls her, he gives a different number every time. Did either of you notice that?
When he calls Nadine?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. Maybe she's never in the same place. But he always somehow knows where she is, which is bizarre for someone who doesn't like someone.
I feel like it's operator, give me Plaza 3, and then the next four numbers are the ones that change. Which yeah. I still don't understand how they did that back in the day. You know,
the switchboards worked. Yeah,
yeah,
pretty intense.
At first, I thought it was the Plaza Hotel, but it's like no. They usually have some sort of word at the top, and maybe it was the Plaza Hotel. I don't know. I don't even think about.
I mean, Hannah was living in a hotel the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. Yes, at the Regent?
Yeah.
Regency Hotel, whatever, yeah.
Something like that.
Mm.
So who did you want Hannah to end up with since this turned into a romance movie? Would you rather Don or John?
Oh, God. For her. Can we have a lesbian option, please?
Listen,
are we going to say Nadine and Hannah find each other?
And they do their own little duet. Thing, mm-hmm. but they have their own careers.
I mean there was a moment too in the opening where I was like, are Don and John dating? like
they're just very good friends
under the table, you know, they're roommates, wink.
Wink. I felt like Johnny was just so very sweet. I just wish that he had quote-unquote fallen in love with Hannah a little more legitimately than bumping into the street and then stealing a cart I think he bought the cart umbrella. You know, he paid for it, and it's like he had a soupçon of stalker energy, which was kind of like, but still very kind of romantically chivalrous. But I just, and he was very sweet with her in terms of taking her out to dinner and kind of romancing her very, very gently. And then when she says, no, sorry, I'm in love with Don, he takes it. He's like, okay, all right, I'll leave.
Cool, we'll still be friends.
We'll still be friends. Good luck to you. You know, that kind of thing.
This movie is also oddly feminist for the time where there's moments like that. I mean, yes, Fred Astaire does talk down to her at the beginning when he's giving her the makeover. But when they're headlining, it's always the woman's name first and then Hughes.
Hmm.
So it's Nadine and Hughes, Hannah and Hughes, Juanita and Hughes. Like, he always takes the second slot, which I was like, good on you, bro.
I mean, sorry, my feelings are mixed there because they use the woman's first name, not her last. And they use his last name.
Well, yeah, I didn't understand.
But who wants to see Nadine and Dawn?
That's, I guess, a good question. We don't know what any of their. I could see Brown and Hughes. Like, yeah, I could Brown see and that Hughes. Being a thing, okay. You know?
Hale and Hughes, because Nadine's last name is apparently Hale.
That's right. That's right. She is Nadine Hale. Hale and Hughes. See, that would work.
Yeah.
Missed opportunities. Or there's something weird going on. I don't know which.
But as to feminism, yeah, I mean, this is coming out after World War II. So there's a new energy of women having their own sense of self and power and fighting for their, like you said, individualism and being able to say, no, I'm not going to pretend to be someone else. I'm going to be, yeah, just,
yeah. It's like the whole crux of this is her being like, I'm a person.
Yeah.
Nadine says that so I have importance. I'm going to do me. Goodbye.
Yeah. If anything, it's Don being taken down many pegs about like his perceptions of what his scene partner, his dance partner should be. And I love how much of an asshole Astaire is in this. And maybe it's that extra Gene Kelly, you know, energy that you know that was siphoned off from previous movies, that because it was written with him in mind, or at least structured with him in mind, that Fred doesn't usually get to, he usually plays kind of like the sweet, cheeky kind of rascal as opposed to
top
the
hat.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Or in all, you know, he kind of plays the mischievous more, you know, kind of asshole. This one, he's just like, why didn't you tell me that you should be playing yourself rather than pretending to be someone else? You're the problem. And she's like, you told me to dance like this.
Yeah.
How did you, what? And, you know, he's forgiven for comedy's sake. He'd be very hard to work with in modern days.
Oh, yeah. He'd get slapped.
Yeah,
for
be like,
sure.
How dare you? How dare you? I'm calling the stage manager.
Unions.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to talk about before we get into Sharp and Flat? Either of you?
Scroll
through your notes real quick.
I will want to say that the whole, anytime there was like a vaudeville sequence that Judy Garland is in, I was thinking about, oh, this was Judy's youth. She grew up as part of the Gum Sisters, at least in the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
So this would have been like little baby Judy Garland, you know, singing her face. This would have been her life she's kind of reliving.
What about Fred? Was he also a vaudevillian, or was he just a movie star?
He danced with his sister Adele on Broadway,
right,
and other places. So he was definitely in this thing. And I also wanted to point out that slow-mo sequence in Steppin' Out with My Baby is so beautiful.
It's so cool how they did that.
Obviously there's a like, oh, there's a green screen. Oh, there's a little bit of, you know, fuzziness compared to the background. But to have like an audience to be able to watch a sequence of Fred Astaire in slow motion and to really watch all his movements that usually they would see super fast. And to have that, I would have been like, I would have walked out of the theater at the end and bought another ticket to see it the next day or later that day, just
or you
to
just
watch
stayed
that sequence. Or you just stayed, just sat in the same seat. Yeah. Yeah. I absolutely love that sequence. And there's like three other girl dancers that he dances with, and that thing had their own little moments, yeah. And I also want to give a shout out to the character of Mike the bartender, who had a lovely
Mike.
Yeah, it was so nice. Yeah.
So here's another fun thing about our good friend Charles Walters. He choreographed this movie with Fred Astaire.
Ah, cool.
He is more of a choreographer than a director, from what I'm seeing. He did do Barry, It Was a Lady.
Oh,
he did a movie called Gaslight, which I think is just funny by title.
It's not what you think it's about.
I know that's it's not, but I think that's why I think it's funny. He also choreographed Broadway Rhythm, the Ziegfeld Follies movie that he directed, Bud Abbott and Lou Costello in Hollywood.
I know that one. Yeah.
And some of the movies he directed, he choreographed.
And he knew how to shoot them. He definitely knew how to shoot them.
That's which I mean, this one, you see everything, which is great. I mean, also at this time period, in film history, you saw the whole body. They didn't like cut off the feet or, you know, show only just the main person, and you're just seeing like the background dancer's arms wave or something, like in modern musical movies.
They shot it as if you were watching it for the most part from the audience, very high up from the audience. And then there's wonderful shots of Ann Miller twirling that skirt in Shaking the Blues Away. And, and
I was dizzy
that.
From that ending, so good. Like turn.
Yeah. Yep.
Watching this movie, I realized that I think Ann Miller is more of a dancer than she is a singer, and Judy Garland is more of a singer than she is a dancer. Not to say that they're bad at the other thing, but like they're more, you know,
known for those things.
For those things. And like Judy in this movie was kicking her face and everything. Okay. I also laughed in was it the reprise of It Only Happens When I Dance With You, that they dance in his apartment on the bearskin rug and you're doing the taps, but then when you're on the rug, there are no taps. I was like,
They were paying
good call,
attention.
everyone.
They were paying attention when they were doing the dubbing over. Yeah, exactly.
Lauren, did you actually have something else? I saw you scroll through your.
Did. And this is something that blew my mind and it has nothing to do with anything we've talked about. It cost 15 cents to get a plate of roast beef, some pie and milk.
Yep.
Blew my warped, fragile little mind.
That'll be 15 cents.
That'll be 15 cents.
Which is the same price as some of those magazines.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I was like, that is. I need to sit here and I need to think about this, like, especially because we right now are living through such a kind of post-inflation crisis where if you want to get a candy bar, it's like almost $3 for a regular size one, singular, regular size candy bar. So my brain right now is like, well, the math is not looking so good over here right now.
So in their little purses, they had just like thin dimes and pennies.
Yes, and it paid for everything.
So but now she's getting 150 a week.
I know. And nowadays I walk like, I barely pick up a dime on the floor of the subway. I don't want to get my fingers dirty for a dime.
But I could a dime would be pie. I know, but you could have gotten pie and roast beef. Oh. Maybe not the
and
milk.
Milk.
Anyway, I just thought that was fascinating in that moment. Especially because I'm feeling the pinch of the way things are economically right now. And I was like, God damn, that is wild.
But so, once again, that line would have gotten a laugh because yes, people would be like, oh my God, do you remember when it was 15 cents? Now it's like a dollar.
Exactly. Now it's 50 cents.
And now we're saying, oh my God, it was 15 cents at one point. Now it'd be like $60.
Yeah. Roast beef. Roast beef is expensive. Yeah.
Especially in New York.
Maybe not at Mike's. Maybe not at Mike's though. And maybe
okay,
he got gave her
like
a discount.
$40 for the roast beef, the pie, and the glass of milk.
Maybe she got a previous employee discount because she used to sing there. I don't know.
Okay, so fine. She gets 2 cents off. Okay. Yeah.
Like, maybe it used to be 17 cents. Rolling.
It's true. Well, maybe now they know, but they also know she's rolling in it. So maybe not. I don't know.
She didn't tip him. Popular. She didn't tip Mike.
She didn't. Well, was tipping a thing back then? That is a historical question that hopefully somebody will answer at some point. Hooray! All right, let's get into Sharp and Flat, though, shall we?
Sharp Flat.
So in this section, we're going to highlight some moments, whether or not we talked about if we liked it, it's sharp. And if we didn't like it or thought it could change, it's flat. I'm liking that I'm starting with flats now just because.
Get it out of the way.
This is a good. We all love like this movie. Love it. Maybe I will give it a rewatch at some point on my own. I will boldly say that. But so my flats. Okay, this is the 2024 viewpoint of watching a 1948 movie set in 1912, but this. Is time this is a timeless flat. Don's treatment of Hannah, where he's treating her like a thing and not a person at the beginning of the movie, and sprinkled throughout, but like really when they first meet, the way that he's talking to her, I'm like, my guy, this is a person. I don't care who you think you are. I also flatted the not knowing left from right bits, because I don't think the payoff was that strong. I was hoping for like a button of the joke.
It's kind of funny, obviously, but it didn't need to be there. It's not like such a plot point that it comes back for any. Like she's fine. She's got a little bit of a, you know, some would say a disability, whatever. But whatever, that's fine.
It's like in Wonka when they made him illiterate, and I'm like, why is this important? Like, why is her not knowing her left from her right important?
I haven't seen this movie yet, so okay.
I'm glad I didn't. What?
Sorry. Yeah. They...
spoiler alert.
Sorry, spoiler alert. They made Willy Wonka illiterate in Wonka.
What? I mean, no.
Okay.
It doesn't really matter in the in the long run of the movie.
Yeah, okay.
But really, those were it for my flats. Let's go with Lauren. What are your flats?
I was like, so Pygmalion, but for dancing. Okay. More Pygmalion. Maybe I'm still traumatized. I'm still traumatized. Oh. That's the short story there. to follow up with that, I was like, Astaire is pissing me off. Too similar to Higgins for my liking.
Yes.
But I'm like, some gay, of the lines. Well, yes. Well, we don't know. I mean, he could be pansexual. I really do feel that. His friends are all very good looking. One never knows.
You talked about a lesbian relationship. I just want them all to like have love. Just the four of them. Be a happy whatever
you
is.
Are.
Blob.
Love Blob.
Love Blob.
I'm going to make so much money off of that. Y'all don't even know.
Love Blob.
Oh, and the other thing that I found interesting is that Ann Miller didn't wear heels when she was dancing with Fred Astaire.
She took them. The sequence between whatchamacallit with the girls
magazine cover.
She had heels dancing with the boys.
Yes,
but then she goes backstage, hands her fan to Essie, and then comes back and magically has wearing flats.
Yeah, I have a feeling it has to do with the height difference between
you
the two
correct.
Of them. If she wears heels, that cracked me up because they did it to Judy Garland too. Judy Garland was in flats when she was dancing with him as well, and I was like, "Well, that's
some but sequences."
What's interesting about that though, and this is another thing I had to look up is that Judy Garland was 5 foot flat, mm-hmm.
yeah,
and Fred Astaire. Is 5'9". So if you watch a lot of the scenes though, he is like hunched over. And that was more the Gene Kelly style of dancing is being a little more relaxed and everything. And Fred Astaire had more of the technique, you know, straight back and everything.
But Judy was wearing high heels in a lot of the sequences as well. And a lot of the, there was only a couple, I think in the Fiddle Up, on your violin, da, 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 da. Some of the vaudeville stuff she was in flats, but then otherwise, like for the Midnight Choo Choo Lee for Alabama, and like in the rehearsal footage, she's wearing heels. She's wearing three-inch heels.
Yeah,
I was like, wow.
There were moments where the two of them are on like the same plane. He might be a little taller than her, but like they are on the same. They look the same height, and I was just like, this is not right. any other flats, Lauren?
No, those were the ones that I was like,
besides the one on your feet. Hey-o.
Hey.
I wore platforms today. I don't know what you're talking about.
Boom.
No, those are the ones that I was like, the first two were truly flats. The other one was more just like, huh, that's interesting. Like, come on, Ann, you can wear high heels. Don't let him tell you you can't wear them if you don't wanna.
All right, Sierra, what are your flats?
I have just a couple of like, oh, once again, we're 2024 looking back. The fact that Nadine has a black maid and Don has an Asian maid, a butler. And
you almost said maid, I love that.
Yeah, I almost said maid, whatever. And then I think I love the song Shaking the Blues Away. I absolutely adore it. I wish it didn't have the voodoo line. And I think in some references, people have changed the lyrics to something other than voodoo, you know, to have that image of the, you know, the kind of the other ethnicity shaking themselves. Also, question, because this is the first time I've seen the Stepping Out with My Baby sequence with as a full adult in a long time. For the Stepping Out with My Baby, did they have kind of a tan makeup? Everyone had kind of a tan makeup to me. Were they?
I noticed that, and I wasn't sure if that was the thing.
Kind of a Louisiana look to things, maybe,
or if it was a contrast thing in the filming, having been remastered.
I know
too much contrast, so I don't know.
Yeah, so that was to me. I was like, are they almost in blackface? That's what I was just like. Ooh.
Hold on, I'm going to pull it up for reference.
Are they in blackface light? I don't know. That one kind of annoyed me this time. Also, Down on the Farm, as catchy as that and as beautiful as Judy sings it, that's just kind of like a, I'm in Michigan and I'm just a, I don't know. As an introduction to Judy Garland to the movie, I wish they had chosen something.
That stupid apron as well.
I was very confused by that. I'm like, what is happening here?
Because she's a little milkmaid.
She ripped off those pieces and then put on that apron. So I'm watching the Stepping Out with My Baby, and there is some bronzer involved, I will say that. But I'm not sure. Because even he looks
a little tan,
but that might also be the white of the suit
in contrast.
Yeah,
maybe there's some experts out there that know exactly.
Oh no! Now I'm seeing one of the one with like the feather hat that like swoops around her cheek.
Yeah,
she's looking very bronze there.
Yeah, so
but that's. That's me. That's what my eyes are seeing. I'm not sure if that's true or not.
Yeah. I had some warning bells go off as I was watching, which might not be.
Any other flats?
No, I can understand some of the Dawn is treating her like an asshole, but that's part of the story and you have to have some sort of conflict. And she has to fight, you know, she has to buy the, you know, Hannah has to, at the end, kind of fight for her right to be viewed as a human being. So it's, she has to have something to fight against, I guess. And that's
an obstacle.
Yeah. And she has to be like, hey, you wouldn't even know what color my eyes are. You're not paying attention to me as a, and obviously he kisses her to make her,
open her eyes.
Yeah. That's funny.
So every once in a while in this segment, I have what I like to call a natural, which is neither a sharp nor a flat. In this case, it's both. And that is the hats of this movie.
Aww.
Some of them were great and some of them were not.
I just love that green feathered one that's just like this giant fountain of feathers just coming over. And I'm just like, how do you wear that? How?
Like even the white hat at the beginning that he buys, where the model is like, this hat is gross, don't buy it. I was like, no, that hat is actually quite nice.
Didn't you say the opposite? Didn't you say this is the perfect one for you?
I thought she said that this is not the right hat.
No, I think it's the opposite. But
I'll make her a very terrible salesperson, don't you think?
No, yeah, exactly. I love the line. Here are the lyric, here's a lid for your lady's dome. Happy Easter. Here's a
happy Easter to you. Oh, yeah. I waited for Fran Drescher to come out and it didn't happen. So that's flat. There you go. I found another flat.
And weren't those girls also in the magazine cover?
Yes.
And I believe
the
so.
Same models. I was like, oops.
They had them. They may as well use them.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? You are correct though. I was mistaken. She does say, this is exactly right for you. And it is, but I didn't think it was that bad of a hat personally, that white one.
Yeah.
They're the red one that Judy wears in the rain. I was like, I get it that we're in transition and you're trying to like up your game, but that's not the hat for you. All right, sharps. So I sharped our love blob, the actors, because they did such an amazing job. I'm sharping the choreography, which I believe all of us are doing that.
Oh, yeah, my goodness.
That's what this movie is. I sharped the drum crazy dance / drum break. And then I did sharp how the woman's name is above Dawn's name. Just because I was like, that's something interesting. I do agree with you, Lauren, that it is a little weird that it's their first name and his last name with "and" in the middle.
Yeah.
But that's really it for me. Lauren, what about you? What are your sharps?
thought the costumes across the board were absolutely stunning.
Oh, yes.
Didn't see a single thing that I was like, why is that here? Because that almost always happens to me in these older movies. I'm like, ooh, why? I don't, what? Almost always, there's always one look where I'm like, this was, whoa. But no, every single outfit was absolutely stunning. The blue feather dress in particular and the orange feather dress, I'm a sucker for feathers at the end of the day. Love, 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 love. I really enjoyed the love scene, I'm putting air quotes, love scene between Hannah and Johnny at the restaurant. Really, actually, all the scenes at the restaurant to me are solid gold. Like, because I loved, even when I write myself, like, I love putting characters in situations where they have to behave a certain way, even if they're feeling otherwise. And then watching them try and work their way through a normal social situation while they're battling something internally. And then, you know, chaos ensues. That's why I'm like, anytime somebody puts a really solid dinner table scene in a movie, I am thrilled, because it's just choice.
That first restaurant scene where it's Johnny, Nadine, and then Nadine and Don, and then Nadine.
Yes, yes, yes.
There is a moment where, I don't know if y'all picked up on this, where Ann Miller takes a piece of the roll that is there, like a little tiny piece,
yep,
puts some bread on it, and then nibbles it and puts it down. I was like, I know why you did that, because of takes and whatnot, but by fucking God, that was hilarious.
You were trying to eat it. I also like the fact that Jules Munchen had as the maitre d', had like table for two, table for three,
yes,
table for
two, yes,
table for
yes,
one.
Yes. And since that's my life some days of the week, I'm like, I know exactly what this feels like, dealing exactly with these particular people. I'm like, I see you.
And then at the very end, when it was just Johnny and Hannah in that final scene, they stand up to leave. And Jules is like, oh, leaving already? Sarcasm. Here's your hat and coat. He's so ready for them to not stay.
And then they bow. The other person bows. Mm-hmm. It was like, that's perfection.
So yeah. I've got a couple more. No one, I've said this earlier, I'm going to repeat myself. No one will ever be as precise a dancer as Ann Miller. I'm convinced. No. Like, nobody out there today, even, I think, can match her precision. Like, watching her spot, those turns we were talking about where she was whipping around, intense, and she's nailing the spot every single time. I was like,
again,
God damn.
I was dizzy, and I'm only watching it.
Yeah, and I'm like, and when you spot as a dancer to turn, that's what keeps you from not getting dizzy and giving yourself vertigo for funsies, you know? So I was like, that was great. And my last one is the reprise of It Only Happens When I Dance With You. I really loved Judy Garland's take on that song, because the first time through, I'm like, oh, it's a cute song, it's sweet, but there's something about what she can do with a song, what she was able to do with a song, that it gives it a certain life. There's such a, I mean, that's why, like, when you watch or you listen to her Capitol Years albums or the stuff when she was at Carnegie Hall, it's just like, it's for me in that movie, I'm like, this is like the reason why she was thought of as such a chantreuse for so long when she stopped making movies. I was like, I'm watching it, and like the camera's just sitting there focused on her at the player piano. I was like blown away, because it's so simple and so subtle, but my gosh, it's maybe my favorite moment in the entire movie.
I agree.
You're welcome.
She yearns. It's like, it only happens when I dance with you. My
yeah, it's want, real specific.
I love you. I want you. I want to continue dancing with you. That it's that kind of difference, as opposed to, you know, Fred just kind of going, it only happens when I dance with you.
Like, but he's supposed to be having those feelings in theory for Nadine. So it's interesting that it's just the way it comes across is just very different. So I appreciate the different perspectives.
I guess it goes to show you, like, the relationships, just because of the yearning. I mean, would we call her a crooner, Judy Garland? Because
that's why I use the word chantreuse, the French word.
Because she has that Because it also gave me Man That Got Away vibes.
Yeah, oh, I mean, it's Torch Song all the, you know, yeah, all the way.
But
we could say she's a songstress. I don't know if I call her a crooner.
Yeah,
because so, that I associate so much with like the male singers, the men singers of that period, personally. So she's a songstress for sure.
And crooner just seems like there's a little bit of coolness of distancing from the text.
Yeah.
Judy never had Judy's one false
all emotion
moment. It's all emotion on the text, even if it's just like I'm singing my face off and it's a fun song about a train, like, you know, like Atchison, Topeka or Midnight Choo Choo or something like that. She's just enjoying the shit out of it.
Yeah. Or I'm gonna sing about a trolley, for fuck's sake.
Yes. Any transportation.
Yeah. Sierra, what are your sharps?
I enjoyed so many of the little funny lines that they wrote in here, like Fred Astaire's holding a glass of whiskey or something, and she's like, can you drown a brunette in this with this, how tall is she, you
know,
things like those, like things. And then like the like, oh, my name is Hannah Brown, well, we can fix that. I wrote down, what idiot ever told you were a dancer? You did. and then he says to her, I don't want the very best, I want you.
Which is insulting, really.
So insulting. So absolutely insulting, but it's hilarious. It's so funny.
Now imagine Gene Kelly saying all of those.
Yeah, exactly.
It would sound different.
Yeah. And then the beautiful monologue that she has with Johnny at the restaurant. And she's like, well, when they were passing out the wishes, I wished for him, you know, okay. That kind of, those kind of just very funny lies. And then, of course, why didn't you tell me I was in love with you? I guess a callback from that. I will also say that there is that once again, the Torch song in Mark's Bar, Better Luck Next Time, that Judy Garland sings. We haven't even talked about that. That song is gorgeous. I love that that Torch song. Do you remember that one?
Trying to find it.
Better luck next time. That can
oh yeah, and then she's in the emerald dress.
Yeah. This is. I wrote down, I was yelling at my computer for Hannah not to open the door for Don because his words are empty.
Yeah. Well. Yes. Well. I mean.
That's how I felt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Watching it.
I love that song. That's just so good. I'm sorry. I'm amazed we haven't heard that in kind of American songbook reviews more often. I don't know. Maybe it's.
I think it's time for you to do it. One of you
maybe.
To do it.
I usually go for Shaking the Blues Away because that's my favorite song from this entire show. I also want to sharp. When they after rehearsal they go out for I guess dinner break, and they have to go out walking down the street, and Dawn challenges her to start making guys look at her, and Judy Garland comes up with that face of like the blowfish face. I don't know how she did that, but it makes me laugh every single time.
So
and
good.
Yeah, I wonder where that face came from. I love it.
Any other sharps?
I mean, I love the songs. I love a piano. When the Midnight Choo Choo leaves for Alabama, those kind of fun fun Irving Berlin songs. I'm not Snooki Yoakums can kind of go
yeah, whatever.
But there are so many, you know.
It filled
songs.
The void.
It filled the void. You know.
Well,
I mean, they were disgusted too, so that's
yeah.
fair.
They're like, ooh, yeah.
Speaking of songs, would you add any of the songs to your life's playlist? I wrote down "A Fellow with an Umbrella," the whole vaudeville montage. So that's four songs in one. Score me. It Only Happens When I Dance with You. Reprise the Judy version, basically the one that Lauren sharped, and then Easter Parade. The titular song. Why not?
Titular.
Lauren, what about you? What songs would you add to your life's playlist, if any?
I'm going to stick with my first answer and stay with the Judy's Reprise.
Judy's Reprise.
Mm-hmm.
That's it? Just that one?
Yep.
Cool. Sierra?
I mean, I love a piano. I love that song. Shaking the Blues Away. I will sing that anytime, at any time. Stepping Out with My Baby, my vocal group has a 5-part harmony version of that with its own crazy style. So it's already in my repertoire. And I never think to sing Easter Parade unless it's Easter, but I will gladly sing that anytime as well. And I like the fact that it's the gender switch in this because it's usually a man singing to a girl about her Easter bonnet, but she's singing to the guy about his Easter bonnet.
With all the frills upon it.
All the frills upon it. You'll be the proudest fella in the Easter parade.
Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah.
And on that note, we are done with the episode. Woo!
Finally!
We made it!
It's a long one. And boy howdy, future me is going to have fun editing this.
Sorry.
What do we have to plug or promote? Let's start with Lauren.
Nothing. Oh, the silence is so wonderful.
You just came off a show. You came off a show.
There is nothing happening in my world right now, and I'm really okay with it. I'm really okay with it.
Great.
So, come the end of April, I'm really hoping to be in the same place and getting ready to go to New Orleans. So that's I guess what I can plug is I'm going to be traipsing around. During Cinco de Mayo in New Orleans, because I don't know how to plan vacations, I guess, properly. So catch me there. I guess
you went from one city where everyone's going to be wasted that day to another city that everyone's going to be wasted that day.
Yeah. I can't say. My friends and I always know exactly how we're going to do things. So, and then, you know, as per usual, I find out too late. And I'm like, well, okay.
Will you post pictures onto your Instagram of your wild adventures?
Probably.
Which is?
Oh yeah, right.
I feel like I've been up.
Oh my gosh, well, I've been on this podcast so many times. At this point, if you're interested, you would have found me already.
You never know. This could be somebody's first episode. They don't know you.
Okay, fine. You can find me at lodges_sangs on the Instagram and on TikTok, but I'm never on TikTok. So good luck. Good luck finding me. Short, long story short.
Sierra, what about you? Anything to plug or promote?
Oh, God. In May, I have so many things, and hopefully they're all going to come to pass. I'm doing the Theater Now Soundbites Festival in early May. I'm doing like a 10-minute musical. I'm going to be singing at 54 Below for a Shining in Misery musical. It's a Stephen King parody musical. And I'm also singing.
That's awesome.
I'm also going to be singing at Don't Tell Mama for John Cook's Composer Showcase. And then there's another, there's a musical that it's Metra musical that I'm going to do a workshop in the middle of May. I think there's a fifth one that I can't remember. There's a lot of things I'm doing.
A Metra musical?
It's a climate-controlled musical that is like Metra's mother is in it, and it's I have an official title sometime soon. It'll be on my website.
Okay, Metra's a person. Got it.
Yeah, it's like a Greek myth, but it's all about like climate issues.
Interesting.
It's a rock musical.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
I'll be one of the tree nymphs, which is kind of like you know the trio of nymphs or whatchamacallit. They're like the Greek chorus. Basically.
Just take my money right now.
Yes. So we're doing that. And I have a couple of other things. But by this time, hopefully it's all on my website or my internets, which is Sierra Ryan, SierraReign.
And I don't know. If you have your Easter bonnet on while we're listening to this episode, I'd love to see it. You can email me at buttersongpod@gmail.com. I'm also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at buttersongpod. If this was on, because this wasn't, there's no stage version of this, right?
Not that I know of.
Yeah, so if there was a stage version of this, dear listener, who would you cast as the four main leads of this. I'd love to know. I didn't ask Lauren or Sierra this. They can they can write in if they want to. And if you want to be part of next episode's conversation, well, we're going to be talking about Bo Burnham's Inside. It was on the outline.
I'm paying that much attention.
They're always
on second
the
page of the outline. Second page of the outline.
Second page.
Oh, I have 2 pages, man.
So there's so many songs. That's why. Lauren and Sierra, thank you so much for letting me pair you two together to talk about this fine classic movie. We will see you soon on a podcast and future episodes. And thank you everyone for listening, and bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Special thanks to Aaron Troy for creating the pod's artwork and to Nick Bombacino for composing the theme song and the jingles. A huge thank you to CastBox for hosting this podcast. And thank you again for tuning in to today's episode of Life's But a Song. Bye for now, everyone, and have a musical day.